The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I think that quote about defeat could be attributed to Prime Minister Netanyahu, who never seems to acknowledge defeat at all.
Yeah, it doesn't. He doesn't seem to be making very much progress in that regard.
Unfortunately, not. Yeah. Before we talk about that, I just wanted to say two little snippets for you. First of all, again, second night of bombing apparently in Syria, once again being attributed to Israel, two nights in a row now. It's just more of the same. You know, just more explosions being experienced, mostly directed towards areas of storage of weapons, arms, ammunition, much of which is being imported from Iran, making its way to the Syrian government forces, making its way to the renegade forces in Syria, and of course also making its way to Hezbollah in Lebanon. So, continues to be a concerning situation with the arms flow that's going on in Syria from Iran. And unfortunately, not a good piece of news following the story that we had about the terror attacks at Tapuach Junction. It was announced that one of those people who were shot at Tapuach Junction unfortunately died of his injuries. Yehuda Guetta, 19 years old, studying at a yeshiva, resident of Jerusalem, one of five children, unfortunately died of his injury. So, of course, our sympathies go out to the Guetta family. The relatively good news around that is that the IDF finally managed to capture the person who is suspected of having carried out that shooting at the Tapuach Junction, which, of course, now has amounted to a murder attack rather than just simply a terror attack and injuring people. So, unfortunately, not good news to head into our weekend with.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, let's talk politics for a change. President Reuven Rivlin yesterday handed the mandate to form a government to Yair Lapid. How likely is he to succeed? Has he ever had the mandate before?
He has not had the mandate before. So for Yair Lapid, this is going to a completely new territory. He's never... he has been part of the government. He's been in the coalition, the governing coalition. He served as a minister in government, but he's never had the responsibility to actually form a government. So this is going to be interesting. What's interesting about it, in addition to all of that, is of course that, you know, we already know that he and Naftali Bennett appear to have reached some sort of an arrangement which will involve Yair Lapid not even taking over as the Prime Minister in the first round, at least, in the first rotation of a Prime Ministerial role. So Yair Lapid has come out yesterday very, very gung-ho, saying that he will be forming a government within a week. That's what he said. In reality, he has 4 weeks to form a government before his mandate expires. I think he'll probably need the 4 weeks and probably more. I think the possibility of him actually getting a government together within a week seems remote, but I'm always available to be surprised about these things. So I think he's going to have his work cut out. One of the press articles that I read suggested that he can count up the support of 58 members of Knesset out of the Knesset of 120. It doesn't give him a majority. If he is able somehow to convince one of the other parties to support him from outside of the Knesset, there is a of the ruling majority of outside of the coalition, he may possibly be able to form a minority government. My suspicion is that if he does succeed, and it's certainly not a foregone conclusion, but if he does succeed in forming a government, it's likely to not be a very long-lived government. It's likely to be a government that will probably last only a very, very relatively short period of time. I doubt that it will be able to see through its entire period of 4 years as envisaged by the law, because of the fact that really the only thing that binds the various parties that he's trying to pull together in this coalition is their desire to unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu. If you dig a little bit further than that, it seems as if these are really parties who come from entirely different political perspectives And I find it very difficult to see how they're going to be able to coexist within a coalition beyond a year or maybe two. If we're really lucky, we might get stability for another year or two, but I doubt it'll be longer than that, because there's just so much, there are a lot of egos involved. There are people who come from so many different walks of life and so many different political points of view. It seems to me, I mean, the good thing is that we all trust in those leaders, that what they have, in their intentions is the best interests of Israel rather than to try to promote personal interests. Having said that, politicians generally have egos and there is a personal interest involved, but certainly not to the same degree as we've seen with Prime Minister Netanyahu, who, not only stands accused of progressing, of furthering his own personal interests, but, you know, he's now obviously on trial. And the courts will make their ruling about that. So I reserve my judgment and I will allow the courts to make their own ruling. But I think that in general, the people of Israel feel a little bit more comfortable with Yair Lapid and with Naftali Bennett and with Gideon Saar and the other people who are involved, Benny Gantz, all of those leaders who are involved in the potential new coalition that Yair Lapid is going to put together. So I think for the sake of the stability of our political system and for the sake of the best interests of Israel, we all hope that Yair Lapid will succeed in forming a government. We all hope that it'll be a government that will live long and be very successful and be able to take what is really an amazing country in spite of the political instability and just make it better.
Absolutely. But, let's see what happens over the course of the next few days or week or 4 weeks. Members of the African Hebrews group have been notified that they will be deported in the near future. Give us some background here. Who are they? What lies behind this action?
This is a fascinating story about a group of people who came to Israel in 1969 following a leader by the name of Ben Carter from Chicago. They claim that they are descendants of an ancient Israelites tribe. They are Black Americans, and at the moment that community numbers something like 3,000 people. They arrived here on tourist visas. They decided that they were coming to stay. They camped down. They made themselves at home in the Dimona area. Ben Carter himself then restyled himself as Ben Ami Ben Israel. That was his new name. He claimed to be some sort of a representative of God on earth. But the truth of the matter is that these people who came back in 1969, who adopted Israeli names, Hebrew names, who wear mostly kind of West African style dress, they really have not done any harm to the state of Israel at all. On the contrary, their children go to school here. They all speak Hebrew. They go to the army. They work to try to earn a living. And they claimed residency under the law of return. They said, well, if people who are Jewish are entitled to claim citizenship under the law of return, then that's what we will do, even though their claim to Judaism seems to go back a very, very long way. They couldn't produce a ketubah from their parents' marriage, for example, which is one of the things that people are asked for when they claim citizenship under the law of return. So they're a highly unlikely group of people who have various statuses within their group, people who have, some of whom still are temporary residents. Some of them were granted temporary residency as late as 1992. And then in 2003, some of them were actually granted permanent residency status. Obviously, they didn't automatically qualify under the law of return, even though that's what they claimed. And so the Interior Ministry has been trying to deal with these people. And I think that there's been an attempt somehow to try to accommodate them, because they really don't do any harm at all. They've come with all the best of intentions, even though some might find their views and their claims to be a little strange, but they really don't do any harm at all. Then Ben Ami Ben Israel, their original leader, passed away, and they've continued to survive as a group until recently when some of them were advised that they will be deported. And it seems as if though they are kind of members who are not really part of the core group, but still somehow applied for residency, citizenship in Israel. They were not granted that. They've been granted temporary residency permits. Anyway, to cut a whole long story short, the Interior Ministry has now advised quite a number of them that they are, stand to be deported because they don't have a proper status to continue to live here. The Interior Ministry has also said, of course, that they're entitled to appeal against that deportation order under the law. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, my personal view is that we do have a law about who is entitled to live here, and I think the law needs to really be applied. The contrary view, of course, is that these are good people who bear no grudge, who have no, make no trouble, who are, you know, very, very positive, good citizens. Why would we bother to deport them?
It just seems so random and so unnecessary. Really, it's I just can't see the point, really. So,
I think the point is that there is a law. The law says that these are the circumstances under which you're entitled to live here. Of course, the moment you start to turn a blind eye to certain people who are transgressing the law, then it creates something of a precedent for others who might claim, well, you turn a blind eye to them, why should you be insistent upon deporting me? And so there is a dangerous precedent, a potentially dangerous precedent that could be set if the Interior Ministry doesn't apply the law very strictly in this case. But as I say, you know, I think that there is room here to somehow find a compromise solution.
Absolutely. Tell us about Intel CEO making a short visit to Israel.
Well, Pat Gelsinger, who is the CEO of international Intel organization, was in Israel just for a short visit earlier this week. His visit was officially to inaugurate the new construction that Intel has entered into in order to facilitate some of its people. The truth of the matter is that Intel has a number of constructions that are going on, massive developments for Intel in Israel. Intel is already the largest employer in Israel. It has something like 14,000 employees in Israel alone. That comes from not only the Intel factories, but of course companies that Intel has bought over the years, most notably Mobileye, which it acquired in 2017 for $15.3 billion. And more recently, Intel bought a chip maker, Habana Labs, back in 2019. That it paid $2 billion for. And it also acquired Moovit, which is a smart transit startup company. It was acquired last year in May for $900 million. So Intel has made a number of significant acquisitions of Israeli companies over the years. And so it now has a total of 14,000 employees, people that it employs. And apparently the company has said that it intends to recruit another 1,000 new employees in Israel over the coming year. And as part of that recruitment drive and expansion in Israel, Intel is also building a new campus in Haifa adjacent to its existing campus. It's also building a new office for Mobileye. That apparently is costing $400 million. And that's in Jerusalem. Mobileye, of course, is a maker of self-driving technologies, and it's building a new research and development campus in Jerusalem. And then, of course, the Intel factory, which is in Kiryat Gat, is also being expanded, and money is being spent to increase the capability of the production facility in Kiryat Gat. And apparently that's going to end up costing Intel something like $10 billion, which is just an amazing sum of money to expand its chip manufacturing capability. Of course, an employer like Intel and a company of that size had the ear of the Prime Minister. Pat Gelsinger did have an opportunity to meet Prime Minister Netanyahu. But I think all of this really goes to show how positive Intel is about its activities in Israel. It's a real boost for Israeli economy and a real complement to Israeli technology.
Absolutely. Really, really just phenomenal. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you on Monday.